the studios of 2RBH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome. Well, what have we got this week? How about low-rider cars in the big open spaces of Mexico this week? Plus, outer space, our outer space specialist talks about wireless charging for EVs. We've gone all Rocket Man this week in 30 Laps. Not only, but also, your next Uber ride could be a battery-powered one. Take that electric Uber to the spaceport. There's a starman waiting in the skies. This week in 30 Laps. So let's kick off, shall we, and see what this low-riding cars in Mexico is all about. But first, the ex-NASA scientist looks to develop wireless charging roads for electric vehicles. This is from drive.com.au, Andrew Slice, and written on the 18th of May. Wireless charging technology is something that has been in our phones for some years, and it's even in our cars. There is a way that we could charge our cars using the same technology. Or maybe there is. While a real-world solution is still a few years off, a group of researchers at Cornell have begun working on this technology, which will use similar fields to charge cars as they drive. According to Karim Afridi, an associate professor at Cornell, the magnetic field required to charge a mobile phone is a lot smaller and a lot less complex than the field needed to charge a moving vehicle without touching the surface. Instead of using magnetic fields, Afridi mentioned that his team is looking into high-frequency electric fields that should have enough grunt to charge a car from afar. They thought it was not feasible because they did not think of going to the high level of frequencies that I was thinking of, Freedy said. But that has always been my area of research. It's really my passion to go very high frequency and push the technology to its highest potential frequency. Afridi's team has reportedly made developments in charging cars with up to 18 centimetres of ground clearance, which is more than enough for your average electric vehicle. The vehicle would be charged via plates embedded in the road, allowing the car to gain charge as it passes over these plates. As you can imagine, setting up this sort of infrastructure would take a very long time and would be incredibly expensive, but would be another incentive for EV adoption. Afridi suggests the plates could be installed to stop signs and traffic lights, where cars would be spending a lot of time stationary, allowing them to regain handfuls of charge at a time. Interesting concept, hey? How about that? That was by Andrew Slice from the Australian online drive.com from the Sydney Morning Herald, and it was dated the 18th of May, 2021. Sounded a bit like charging plates and cars going over them at the start, didn't it? But hey, if we invented one of those, we'd all be heroes. Moving on to lowriders in Mexico. And this is from the online magazine Road and Track, and it was written by Mac, have to be an American, wouldn't it? Hey, Mac Hogan, 11th of March, 2021. wedged between two national forests and split by the Rio Grande, sits Española, New Mexico, with a population of just over 10,000 and an economic relevance that peaked when the railroad rolled through it in 1880. You wouldn't expect much more than small southwestern town tourist fare here. All the more surprising, then, that it has become the lowrider capital of the world. It started small 60 years ago. The lowrider scene has already taken root in Los Angeles, a new car culture born of rebellion. Its brash, flashy, low and slow mantra served as an act of defiance by chicanos who had long been told to keep their heads down, work hard, and assimilate into the white American mainstream. Lowriders were an outward statement that they weren't content to blend in. They had arrived. They had a culture all their own, and they wanted people to know it. That resonated in Espanola, the town sometimes called Little L.A. It has deep ties to the Hispanic and Chicano communities in Southern California. Families that had been in New Mexico for generations would head west seeking opportunity and return with money and a taste of California culture. Lowriders were a natural fit for Espanola, a continuation of the artistic tendencies that had defined northern New Mexico for hundreds of years. Back in the days of horses and buggies, Spanish settlers in northern New Mexico used to adorn their horses. You know, the saddles. They'd make them very ornate and put a lot of work into them so they could show them off. Says Fred Rail, chairman of the board of directors of Espanola Lowrider Museum, currently under construction in downtown Espanola. They ride into town for church, dressed in their Sunday best, flexing with jewels and shiny trim. The slow cruises that clogged Espanola streets on Sundays throughout the 70s and 80s were the same kind of flex. The destination wasn't the key, it was about showing up with your community and demonstrating your pride through spoked rims, white wall tires, custom upholstery, gold and chrome plating, and lots of artwork, pinstripes, murals, etchings, engravings. These countercultural movements are always met with backlash. Every form of automobile modification has sent enthusiasts home with warnings, tickets, and occasionally impound fees. Showing off on the street is a surefire way to draw police's attention, and lowriders were no exception. Hydraulic suspension, the defining feature of the modern lowrider, was invented in response to harassment from law enforcement. California authorities made it illegal for any part of a car's bodywork to sit lower than the bottom of the wheel. With hydraulics, you could raise the car to dodge a ticket and slam it back down again when the cops were gone. In Espanola, lowrider builders were interviewed, tell stories from decades past of being stopped for no reason and ticketed for minor offences. Those bad vibes are gone. In 2018, the city council officially declared Espanola as a La Cruz-friendly municipality and formally adopted the town's long-standing nickname, the lowrider capital of the world. Today, in backyards and garages all over town, enthusiasts are at work building lowriders of their own or pitching in on someone else's project. People help each other out here, says Jeff Quintana, an Espanola lowrider builder. It's part of the culture because so many people are building these cars. There's not any competition between us. We do our own work, and when we get stuck, there's always a friend to call. One buddy is a great welder, another, he's the engine guy. My friend Leroy recently helped me put in a new windshield. Every spring there's a lowrider pilgrimage to Espanola Church, believed to have started healing powers. All the cars come out. They come from Colorado, Albuquerque, says Quintana. It's very intense. And in July, the town celebrates Lowrider Day with a huge parade of hundreds of vehicles.
Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't be sorry, 'cause we believe in you. Soon you'll grow, so take a chance with a couple of kooks hung up on romancing. Will you stay in a lover's story? If you stay, you won't.
Yes, I guess that parade might have a couple of kooks in it too. But let's get back to the lowriders, shall we? On either of those occasions, and at any cruise spot throughout the year, you're likely to find the three exquisite lowriders, along with their owners. These are the top three, apparently. All of them from Hispaniola, all carrying on the legend of the lowrider capital of the world. Impalas, that's Chevrolet Impalas, folks, have long been the go-to lowrider. Sold in massive numbers, cheap to buy, or at least they used to be, easy to fix, and extensively supported in the aftermarket. They're the ideal blank canvas. When Jeff Quintana stumbled upon the remains of a 1960 Impala while dropping off a load of building materials for work, he recognised the potential in the bare shell. It had no engine, no interior, was a cosmetic wreck. The owner was using it as storage, but Quintana saw what it could become. I always wanted a 1960 Impala because my dad had one when I was growing up, Quintana recalls. He bought the car for $2,000, put it on a trailer, got it back behind my house and started working on the thing. Quintana had a vision for what he wanted to build. That vision took him 25 years to get it to perfection. He installed a gold and chrome plated Chevy 350 V8, fitted hydraulics and reinforced the frame for hopping, and painted it cherry red over bright white. It's a classic beauty, made even more beautiful, no detail left untouched. Every inch of the car is painted or plated, every surface textured and polished to perfection. From its massive JBL subwoofers to its pristine gold wheels, Quintana's car is the quintessential image of a lowrider realised in metal and leather. Quintana also builds Viclas, which are customised motorcycles that share the baroque aesthetic of lowrider cars. He calls them Chicano-style bikes. His 1997 Harley-Davidson Heritage Springer and 1992 Electroglide look more like Chicano-style spaceships. But his real love is the Impala. I can't even imagine how much time I would have put into it over the past 25 years, he says. It's a labour of love, the car I have always wanted to build. With Quintana's Impala's embodiment of classic lowrider style, James Lieber's 1982 Cadillac Fleetwood Brougham represents the cross-cultural appeal of these machines. The Brougham was originally built as a lowrider in Compton, California, the epicentre of the early West Coast hip-hop culture. This intricate paintwork, layered over the baby blue base coat, was done by legendary custom painter Kenneth Doc Stewart. The result was an attention-grabbing enough to earn a spot in T.I.'s Top Back Remix music video in 2006, where you can see the caddy cruising body up on its hydraulics and getting lathered up by dancers. Near the high point of the hip-hop lowrider revolution, this was one of the cars that repped the scene on a national stage. But that was 15 years ago. Earlier this year, the car turned up on Facebook Marketplace in Albuquerque, New Mexico, just as Lieber was looking to take on a new project. He had sold his last build, a Hopper Volkswagen, built for hydraulic competitions in 2018. When his mum was diagnosed with cancer, he had finally found the time to get back into the game. The Braum was perfect. I think he means that in context that because his poor mother was diagnosed with cancer, he probably had a bit more time hanging around the house, not doing much. I think that was the context that was meant in. Funny, these phrasing, these American writers. Hey, but let's get back to the show, folks. I like the Impalas, but for me, the square big body of a caddy is something I've always loved, Labour says. I saw the movie The Wash with Dr. Dre. They have that seafoam green Cadillac with a peanut butter top and interior. I've loved it since that day. Finding a car with such a rich history also gave Labour the chance to rescue something special. Its music video days may be behind it, but the caddy's getting a full overhaul from Labour and his friend Leroy China Martinez. They're reinforcing the frame, chrome plating the underbody and tidying up all the details that were skipped on the initial build. All of the major components are getting overhauled, the 4.1-litre V8 engine included. Everything will be updated to modern standards, cleaned up and strengthened. The lone exception is the paint job. Labour will retouch obvious flaws, but a car painted by the Doc himself is too special to respray. It had its first story in Compton in the video, Labour says. I want to give it its second story. Orlando Martinez Jr., wow, that's a great name, doesn't just love lowriders, he loves the scene. He loves the way these cars bring people together. He loves his town. His build is a 1983 Monte Carlo named Espanola and is a rolling testament to that passion. It's not the result of one of grand vision, but a constantly changing creation that he started when he was just 16. I've saved some money to buy the wheels, and then I'd save more the next summer to get a paint job. And, you know, I had a little bit at a time, Martinez says. Then I took the car completely apart in 2000 or 2001 and did the whole frame off reinforcement. Got it all ready for the hydraulics and chrome plating. For decades, the Monte Carlo has not just been a project, but a teacher. Martinez learned bodywork, fabrication, hydraulic assembly, working on the car. The one thing he won't take credit for is the paintwork, which was done by local legend Rob Vanderslice. He gave Vanderslice no direction, no design brief, just handed over the car and asked him to work his magic. Rob's an artist, you know. He does the renders in his head, Martinez says. I was just fortunate enough to get one of his works. Martinez's philosophy is not about building the perfect car or stopping the completion of a single version. It's about pulling in the work, experimenting, changing, and learning from the community. I like the way it makes people happy. It brings out positive energy, you know. When people see your car and then they start asking you questions, or you see how it makes little kids happy, you think maybe one day they'll do something like that. And that makes me very happy. Lowriders may have started as a way to carve out a corner of Southern California car culture, but in Espanola they rule the town. And that seems to make everyone happy in the lowrider capital of the world.
Which came as some surprise. I spoke it.
have one of those cars, you would have reckoned you not only sold the world, but you owned the world. But let's move on. But before we do, this was written by Mac Hogan in March this year. The small New Mexico town is the lowrider capital of the world. And it came from Road and Track magazine. And we leave Mexico for something else. And that something else is more power. Your next Uber could be a battery-powered one. And this is from the Weekend Australian Financial Review, written by Tony Davis on the 15th of May. Spend, which says is Australia's, or Splend, I beg your pardon, which says is Australia's largest leaser of vehicles to rideshare drivers, has ordered 2,000 battery electric vehicles, BEVs, the country's largest ever zero emission cars purchase. CEO Chris King says the cars will be delivered progressively from March when the Chinese brand BYD goes on sale here. It will enable the Splend fleet to meet its largest target of 50% zero emission vehicles by the end of next year. Currently, Splend has 1,500 cars on the Australian roads, but none are BEVs. Its UK fleet, however, is already largely electric, says Mr. King, because there are better incentives there. Last month, AFR Weekend revealed BYD's plans to introduce Australia's cheapest BEV, with orders from August for the delivery early next year. Luke Todd, CEO of the importer True Green Mobility, says the first fleet will be a VW-sized hatchback called an EAI and priced well and truly sub $35,000. That would make it 10 grand cheaper than any other BEV. Now, Mr. Todd says that he has negotiated for the second sub $35,000 BEV from BYD to quickly follow. He describes it as a uniquely shaped high-riding hatch to be unveiled in coming weeks. An electric BYD delivery van is also available and will form part of the Splend order. BYD is a large and ambitious Sichuan, China-based carmaker that employs many leading European designers, engineers, and counts Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway among its investors with 8.2% stake. You see, BYD is being a key EV player in Australia, says Mr. King, and we're getting ahead of the curve. He didn't want to say how much the order was worth, noting the final specifications and mix of models had not yet been completed. He said sharp pricing of the Chinese EVs will make them competitive with conventional vehicles for rideshare drivers. What we've been working on hard is getting the numbers to stack up to make sure that a net position, car costs plus fuel costs, is equal to or better than fuel costs up to $150 a week for some of our drivers, and will go down to $30 a week in electricity. From July 2021 to July 2022, Uber in Australia will halve its service fee for drivers of BEVs, potentially leading to a big increase in their uptake. Uber Green, a trial program in some markets that allows customers to pay slightly more to be picked up in an emissions-free vehicle, is also a further possibility. To put the sale of 2,000 cars in perspective, Australians just bought 5,215 BEVs last year, the Electric Vehicle Council says. CEO Berad Jafrid says the local includes a reliable estimate for Tesla, which does not officially release sales figures. True Green Mobility promised to bring it in at least 6 different BYD models here over the next 2 years and sell them with a showroom-free, direct-to-customer online model. Mr. Todd says Splend, a fleet of drivers with BYD vehicles, could be used to demonstrate the car's potential to Australian buyers. We're also on target to have our first experience centre opened by July or August this year. So people can actually experience BYD cars with two cars sub $35,000. It really is an inflection point for EVs to become mainstream. See, folks, it's happening. Your next Uber ride could be a battery-powered one. And that was written exclusively by Tony Davis for the Weekend AFR of the weekend, the 15th of May. And there we have it. Our show this afternoon, or this evening, or this morning, was all about lowriders. Google them, or look for them on YouTube. They're crazy little cars, or big cars. And there's a huge movement in the United States, so take a look. Wireless charging in the roads for EV vehicles makes sense. It's going to cost a bomb, though. And, of course, pay a little bit more and support your Uber driver in an emissions-free vehicle. It's a good idea, I think. And, of course, there's all the music. Starman, David Bowie. Well, anyone can play David Bowie music. So there was a few guys in there, and girls too, and their versions. I hope you enjoyed that. The Heroes one was particularly good. I thought that was from King Crimson, who's a band I used to listen to a lot in the 70s. Everyone's had a crack at David Bowie songs, so it was a bit different, just from, and other than playing them from the master himself. Anywho, what have we got next week? Not sure. But if you tune in at the same time, we'll find out, hey? It'll be something I hope you find interesting. The show's written and produced in the Sydney studios of 2RPH and for the 2RPH network. Crikey, I nearly forgot. Weird and surprising car facts for our strange days from Autocar Magazine. The ubiquitous Gatso speed camera is used today to penalise speeding drivers, but its inventor had a very different purpose in mind. For his creation, Dutch rally driver Maurice Gatsonides developed the device to measure his cornering speeds in an effort to make it him a faster driver. Speaking about his invention, Gatsonides once said, "I'm often caught by my own speed cameras and I find hefty fines on my doormat. Even I can't escape my own invention because I love to speed." There we have it, folks. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the show. As usual, I've loved bringing it to you. I hope you'll join me next week. Keep safe. Keep that seatbelt on.